my mic did the thing again where it spikes the volume to 75 as soon as I start talking in Skype. It's a weird thing. Yeah, I don't know why it happens.
Why does it do that? Is it Skype doing it, or...
It's Skype doing it to my system audio. I don't know what happens, but it's consistently only in Skype, and it's only when I peak or something like that. If like I say hi like really loudly. I wonder if I can do it now. Hello. Nope, didn't do it. Okay. Anyway. It's just at the beginning of the call. I don't know why. If I say something, it just peaks. It happened with Deanna earlier today, and it happened now. So it's just a cool Skype feature.
How'd that episode go?
We just shat on Iron Man 2 for like an hour, and that was cool.
I thought they did that one already.
No, I mean, unless it's a repeat, I don't think she keeps pretty meticulous records, and she said it was open, so I took it.
Cool.
It was good. I tried to point out the good things about the movie. There aren't a lot of good things about it, but there are some.
Which one was the second one? The second one had Elon Musk in it, but I can't remember the plot.
Oh, man. That's the one thing I didn't mention during the podcast that I wish I had. It slipped my mind. But yeah, how enraged I was at seeing Elon Musk in it was probably the worst part.
Little baby Elon.
Piece of shit. Anyway.
No free cars for you. Nope. Yeah, what's good? What's new? It's been a couple of weeks now.
We had Thanksgiving. I feel like, and we were recording long at like a week after Thanksgiving, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So
almost two.
Almost 2 weeks? I guess. Oh God,
closer to 2 weeks than one.
Maybe isn't yesterday? Anyway. How was your Thanksgiving?
Not bad. A little bittersweet.
In what way?
But it was good. We put my dog's dad or my my dog's dad down. My dad's dog was put down over the Thanksgiving weekend. So that was kind of a drag.
That is not a good way to celebrate the weekend.
No, it's a bummer. But she was pretty old. She was a good dog. Had a nice long life, longer than I would have expected for her breed and the way that she was sort of brought into the world, so it's okay.
I texted you this, but I wanted to share on the record here that about when I met Snickers, your dog.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's a really sweet story that, like, when I was staying at Jacob's house when I was on tour at one point with a couple other guys, Matt and what's his name, Eric, and we met Snickers. Jazz was there also, but we met Snickers, and then Snickers at that point had like hair in her face and everything
lots of it. Yeah,
it was very furry, very fluffy little dog.
She's a Shih Tzu, so she looks a bit like an Ewok when she's real fuzzy. Yeah,
so cute. And then we went to bed, and I feel like the next morning we woke up, and I don't know if we woke up late or if like we got a late start or something, but we turned around and another dog was there, and it was still Snickers. But it was like a hair, not a hairless Snickers, but like a very well-groomed Snickers. And someone was just like, oh yeah, we took it to the groomers. It was fine.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
In the time that I went to bed.
They had a groomer appointment earlier that morning. So I got up early and took both of them. There was really nothing to be done for Jazz. She never needs
Jazz
a haircut. But got their nails did, and Snickers got her hair trimmed up. So she was a completely different dog when she got her hair cut. Just completely, like, not only like her appearance changed, but her whole demeanor, because she was able to see. Because she had that mop that just like flopped over her face, so she couldn't really see much. So when you gave her the haircut, she was like a puppy again. She was just like stoked. She could run around, not to worry about bashing into things or anything like that.
Oh my God. She was very adorable, and I'm sorry for your loss.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I feel bad. You know, she's been living with my dad since we moved out, and it's just kind of been the two of them there. So I feel bad that that she's gone, but it's for the best. She wasn't feeling very good towards the end and hated to see her suffer.
No, it's not good.
Apart from that, though, good holiday. How about yours?
It's not bad. I took the day off of work on Thanksgiving. Is that a shock to you?
It's a shock that you are allowed.
That I'm allowed to take a day off of work? Yeah.
No, well, not just a day off work, but like the day off work.
Yeah, no, we took it off. I didn't get Black Friday off, unfortunately, but I went out of my way to take Thanksgiving off because I'm tired of it, you know.
Yeah.
working on Thanksgiving. Like, you get a little extra bonus, a little pay bump for that day, but it's not worth it, you know? And it took me like 3 years to recognize that of getting, like, I would, in the past, what I would do is I would request Thanksgiving to have an early shift that day, because I wanted the extra money and I wanted to be entered in like the cool Thanksgiving raffles that we have at work.
Oh yeah. And didn't you win that last year?
I did win last year, but that's also part of the reason why I did not want to win again this year, because I won last year. It took them 10 months to give you my prize, which is like, whatever. Get your stuff together, prize department. All right. You know, there's a lot more I can go into of that story, but it's not really good for the podcast form, maybe in person. But yeah, so this year I was like, I don't even care about the raffles. I don't care about the money. My mom came down from Boston to visit. And so we got to spend pretty much the whole week together. It was like, she came down Monday evening, got out of work early that day and went out to dinner and had a good time with her. And then I took Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday off and did not work at all besides in the podcast in the mornings, and just got to chill with my mom for the first time in a long time. Yeah.
That's awesome.
3 days off. It was fantastic.
It's cool. Did you guys end up getting to go see a show?
We did. We saw Mike Birbiglia.
Was
it
good?
Get those passes. Yeah. I did the Rush tickets because I don't know if I told you about this or not, but the guy, like, I got out of work one day. Stop me if I've told this on the podcast already, but
I think you have. You just mentioned something about getting Rush tickets like the morning of or something like that.
Yeah. So last episode, I probably mentioned it where the guy told me not to buy tickets in advance. The guy at the ticket booth told me not to. And I was like, okay. And so I did the Rush tickets. I got there. The box office opened at 10 and I got to the box office at 9:30. Because the guy made it seem very easy. Like, I mean, Broadway shows, people line up, you know, at like, if the box office opens at 10, people line up at like 6 or 7 to get tickets to like really intense shows. Because Rush tickets are cheap. Rush tickets are usually like $29-$39 when they're normally like $200-something or whatever a ticket. So they're heavily discounted and they hold them for people like locals essentially that want to come see the show and not out of towners who need to book their ticket in advance or who can't rush. So I did the Rush tickets. I show up at 9:30. It's pretty cold. It was probably like, you know, 30 degrees outside. I had my coat and my podcast and I'm the only one standing outside this theater at 9:30. Just, you know, it's not a busy street. It's like 48th Street or something like that. And I'm just standing there thing on. And like some of the theater employees walk by me and give me like a weird look. And I'm like, all right, okay. And then this at 9:58, 2 minutes before the box office opens, this lady, she's like, "You look so cold out there. Let me let you in, young man." And she just opens the thing and I walk in and it's like 2 minutes too. She's like, "Just wait for the box office to be ready." And the box office opens up and the lady's like, what do you want?" I'm like, "What do you think I want? I'm the first person here." And it was really funny because as soon as 10 o'clock hit, another dude showed up behind me in line for tickets. And it was hilarious because he was just like, he got there and he sees me. He's like, "Motherfucker, you got here before me." And I was like, "I did. I got here before the box office opens, you son of a bitch." And so the lady's like, "What do you want? Rush tickets?" I'm like, "Yeah." And she's like, "All right, let me see what's available. Hold on. We got any in Rush?" Like yelling to a dude as if they don't have stuff in Rush. And and I get the tickets and the guy, she's like, "You can't even pick what seat you want. It's Rush tickets." And she just prints me out two tickets and they're awesome. They're awesome seats. They're not like front row, like some of the people I was talking to thought I would get. Cause apparently the Court Theater does front row Rush tickets usually. But for this show, the Rush tickets were like row G, which put me, you know, like 25 feet from the stage over That's in the left good. Side of the auditorium. Yeah, no, it was good. We had a pretty clear line of sight, a couple tall fat heads in front of me, but like, you know, what are you going to do? And the guy behind me got row L. So first Rush ticket of the day for Mike Birbiglia's new one was G row. And then the guy behind me got row L. So like, you know, not too far behind, but he was a few. And we saw the show. My mom loved it. It was interesting. You know, it was a lot of, it's like seemed like the weird, it was a family. I mean, it's Thanksgiving. So the theme of the week is probably going to be family, regardless of who you're spending time with or how you're spending time with people. But like the new one is about, you know, having kids and starting a family and whatnot. And my mom just happened to be harping on that whole thing. I'm 31 now. So that's obviously something that starts coming into your periphery at this age is like starting a family and whatever. And obviously she, you know, wants to be a grandma or something. I don't know. at some point in her life, I'm sure she wants to be a grandmother. Maybe she's not rushing into it, but yeah. So she starts talking about those things, and then we see the new one, which she was surprised by. I told her that we had a surprise that night, or like just something that I had planned for us that time. And you know, we're walking through Times Square and she keeps pointing to different things. And I felt really bad because we walked by the Bruce Springsteen show on Broadway.
Oh, no.
And I know it caught her eye and she's like, oh, I don't think she even knew it was there. But we were walking by the Giant Theater and I think she sees the Springsteen thing. I go, Mom, we're not going to the Springsteen show. I'm sorry. And she's just like, oh, okay. You know, whatever. I didn't think we were going to it. But, you know, I feel like if I could, that's something I feel like she could see, you know, like on DVD at some point or like it, that'll run for a while. Microbiglia is only running till January 20th. So I was like, okay, I want to see this while it's there. And it's also very present in my life because I just edited the podcast for Mike. Right.
Which was really good. Listened to that last week or 2 weeks ago. It was really good.
Did you laugh at the part? I had a really hard time deciding whether I should keep in the part where he goes, keep all of this in and just screamed it into the microphone.
Yeah, it was good. I like it. I think he even mentions you by name at some point during the show, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He says it was when he was gesturing, he was talking about how a comedy bit is really just a piece of your life while there's a whole thing. So he's like, he took his hand and made like a photo frame with his fingers and was like, he's like, it's like that corner of the room is that corner of the room if I take a picture of it, but there's a whole office behind it. You know, it's like, that's kind of what his comedy shows are. Mm-hmm. And he said, like, only you and Mike can see it right now. He also touched my shoulder on the way out. He said, thanks, Mike, as he was walking by me and not making eye contact and patting me on the shoulder. So it was much appreciated. I thought it would be funny if I was front row. If we had gotten the front row seats at court for the rush ticketing, I thought he would have spotted me because he did some audience interaction. He broke from the script at one point. I know it doesn't seem like he's on a script, but he is mentally. And he... at some point there were some latecomers and he basically caught them up on the show. He might do that whenever somebody comes in late to a show. But usually Broadway shows are pretty strict on letting people in late. Mm-hmm. This theater was not, cause I don't think it was a totally full house. And, and he just like basically broke and stopped the bit and he started catching them up. He's like, okay, so the past 15 minutes we've been talking about this, we mentioned these two things. And I thought it would've been funny if he saw me in the front row and recognized me, he'd be like, oh, hey, how's it going? Or just like something in the middle of the show. But we were a few rows back, and I will say, try not to watch it. Like, if you're going to see it, even if you're going to watch it on Netflix or whatever, or streaming service when it comes out, don't read anything about it ahead of time or like look at any stills from it or anything, because there are points in the show, one in particular, where if like I had read anything about it or if I had watched a picture of the show or something, it would have spoiled it, which is weird that there could be a spoiler for a stand-up show production-wise. Not from a like specifically what he's saying standpoint, but it was good. I don't think it was his best special. I'll say that. I'm sorry, Mike, if you ever hear this, but
you really like My Girlfriend's Boyfriend, don't you? Isn't that your...
I loved it. Yeah, I love My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. I just watched that the other night. And but I mean, Sleepwalk With Me I think is a like fantastic movie and a fantastic story, and the special was great too. But it's funny because like he talked about in the show where the lady approached him after his set where she was like, do you really have a kid? You know, and he's like, yes, that's the point of my show. It's my comedy. It's like, it's my life. But my mom was like, the sleepwalking thing, was that real? And I was like, yeah, he really did jump through a La Quinta Inn window from the second floor and severed like almost cut his femoral artery or whatever. Like, you know, it's a real thing.
Crazy.
But yeah, it's cool. He does like a recap of Sleepwalk With Me too, because I think he knows that not everybody may have seen his show on Broadway.
Yeah, he does probably not. Well, cool. I'm glad you guys got to go see that. That sounds like fun. What did you guys do for dinner?
Surprise. For dinner? Well, because I didn't work, I didn't have to get out of work at like 4 o'clock and take a express bus from Midtown Manhattan down to Staten Island, which is like an hour trip pretty much. I didn't have to do that this year. So my mom and I just like vegged. She had like an Airbnb around the corner from me. And she just like kind of left me alone until like noon when she came over and started. She's like, oh, I have to cook some Brussels sprouts. Can I use your kitchen? So she comes over and cooks at my place. I went for like a 10-mile run or 9-mile run or whatever and edited the podcast for Monday, which is Lori Kilmartin, which was a fun one. And that was it. Like, I played Spider-Man in the morning. I went for a run. I edited. My mom came over. She cooked some Brussels sprouts. And we made it to Thanksgiving exactly at 5 o'clock, which is when we were supposed to show up. We got a great parking spot. It was just like a perfect Thanksgiving, I feel like. You know, like, nothing wrong with it. I wish my brother and my father could have been there, but that's, you know, they have different lives. Mm-hmm. And we had a nice small Thanksgiving this year. Small being like 7 or 8 people, probably maybe 9 or 9 people, as opposed to like 20, which is what we're used to doing.
Wow.
Yeah, it was nice. It was just like a small Thanksgiving, and I like those. You know, it's cool to have parties where you get to see everybody and catch up, but the conversation, making conversation, can be excruciating, especially when all you want to do is like have a drink or something like that, and just, or like catch up with one person in particular, and you feel like there's like 100 family members to make friends with at that point, or talk to, or meet, or catch up on your life, or I don't know.
Repeat conversations every time you turn around.
Yeah, or like try and explain your living situation or your work situation. Oh, you work for two jobs, so you work at this place, but you also what is a podcast? Yeah, tell me about this podcast thing. Did you have that conversation at your dinner? What is a podcast?
No, it might have come up once. I usually just shrug it off because I know it's just not worth the time. But
it's like a radio show on the internet.
Yeah,
what's the internet?
Like, I'm able to talk to my cousin about it because he does. He's recently started. I don't think they've launched yet, but they're going to start like a gaming YouTube channel. You know, they're I don't know if they're streaming, but they're, you know, they're recording themselves playing what I think are mostly retro games, which is kind of cool. And they're going to do that. So he's into, you know, he's into that kind of thing.
Was it a big Thanksgiving for you?
Well, in comparison to yours, no. I think it's my mom's side of the family is what I always considered like the big holiday, because that was usually like, it's the most people that we're going to see at one time during the holidays on any given occasion. So my mom's side of the family is about like 8 or 9 people. We can all sit at one table now. We used to have 2 tables because my aunt, her husband, and my 2 cousins were there, but they moved this past year down to North Carolina. So there was no kids table this year, which is very exciting for my youngest cousin at the event.
How old is that cousin?
He's in high school. He's driving now, but you know, when you're the youngest, like he's been at the big table for a while now, but you know, usually there was like, it was because one of the adults that could have sat at his seat at the big table had to sit with the younger infant cousin at the small table. So yeah, anyway, this was like the first year that he was justifiably sitting there, and it was nice. But yeah, no, our thing, even though I consider it big, it's relatively small. Cause my dad's side of the family around here, at least, it's generally my dad, my grandparents, and my sister if she's home. So kind of a different scenario there. But yeah, it was good. I like that size too. Like it's manageable. Everybody has 1 or 2 people that they're gonna probably talk to for the most of the evening. You don't really have to talk to everybody, and that's just fine. So
what were you gonna say? No, you say it.
No, I was just gonna say, like, May and I basically just kinda, like, we brought the dog, so we were hanging out with the dog and my cousin Mike, and just chit-chatting about whatever. We went out with him and my sister the other day, too, because Sarah wasn't able to make it home for Halloween, or for Thanksgiving. But she was able to come back for this past week. I think she leaves tomorrow, but she's been here all week. So she came in late on Sunday, and she's able to say goodbye to the doggy, and then we took her out for dinner with our cousin and got some beers and sandwiches.
Nice. Is she staying with you?
No, she stayed at my mom's. So
okay.
Yeah, but we got to see her twice, went out with her. Went to Fatheads, which is a really good brewery in the northeastern Ohio area. I think it started in Pennsylvania actually, but most of their operation is here now.
And then
we had sort of a second, we had kind of a third Thanksgiving almost last night. Yeah, last night. Mm-hmm. We went back to my dad's. We went to Thanksgiving on Thanksgiving Day at my mom's. And then the next day we had my grandparents over to my dad's and we cooked. But Sarah wasn't there. So then when she came into town, we had sort of like a third Thanksgiving at my dad's with her and my
rules.
Grandparents last night.
Yeah. 3 Thanksgivings. Yeah.
There wasn't stuffing the third night, but there was a really good like wild rice risotto soup sort of thing that
Question, any highlights on side dishes? What do you got this year?
You know, I'll be honest, I wasn't too overly stoked on the main Thanksgiving day. I don't know if it was just like, usually it's hosted at my aunt's house, and I don't know what was different this year. I feel like there was something missing. Like, it was all very good. The food was all good, but there was something missing, and I still can't think of what it was. But the stuffing that May made, the following day was really good. Big fan. Real big fan. That nice. Pops into my mind, but apart from that, I don't know. It was all pretty good. I made chicken on the second night because I don't know how to make a full turkey. So I made a chicken.
Isn't it the same? It's okay. Bigger?
Well, I made tenderloins, like, you know, pre-cut pieces and
oh, like yeah. Okay, cutlets or something. Okay, so not right. Like a full chicken in the oven kind of deal.
Yeah,
we did
basically.
A plating adventure where we would, like, with our group chat, we would just send pictures of our plates because we're all really into eating yeah. and buffets. So yeah, we would just send pictures of like round one, round two, desserts or whatnot, and who could make the nicest plate, like nicest looking plate. And the people with iPhone 10s were probably at an advantage because of the depth camera, or like the true depth camera or whatever it's called. And like taking those pictures with like the low depth of field or whatever it's called. And, so I think Ben probably won that one, but my plate was automatically disqualified because there was no turkey on it. So no turkey or gravy just meant that I could not participate in this game. I made a nice side looking dish. Yeah. And then I put like one Brussels sprout on the plate and sent it to them with like the true depth picture and everything like that. And they just started shitting on me because one time in Las Vegas at one of the big buffets, I got a plate of spinach and just ate a plate of spinach.
What? Because it's all they had?
No, it's because it was one of my courses was spinach. And they're like, you fucking idiot. Why would you get spinach at a buffet? You could get anything. They just shat on me for the entire night and the rest of the trip. Listen, it's one of many courses I ate. And I probably, you know, I didn't eat any meat, but I could probably out-eat them all if I really had to.
Oh yeah, don't challenge me. I'll take you on. I love when people are like, oh, you know, you don't eat enough. I'm like, I'm on my fourth plate.
Yeah,
what are you talking about? You haven't even got it for seconds, bro.
Yeah, I'm just not loud when I'm eating. You know, like, or loud about it. Like, in getting up another plate. Like, I remember we went to New Jersey with me, Ben, and Chuck a couple years ago, and it was a couple years ago. It's probably like 10 years ago at this point. We were in college still, and we went, and there's this famous like pizza place, and probably not famous, it was just a pizza place in Jersey that takes like an entire baked ziti and puts it on top of a pizza, and nobody could finish their slice. One slice of this pizza was too much for everybody except for me at this thing. I crushed that pizza. I housed it. That's probably my only claim to fame in eating. I don't really know anything else that I've done impressive, but I out-ate my friends once in New Jersey.
I remember distinctly as a child. I remember so much of it because I was sitting at the table for so long. There was this kid that we were like, our families were kind of friends. And so we went over there and they ordered Fox's Pizza. I don't know if you have Fox's Pizza out there, but it's sort of, it's like Domino's kind of, it's flat and cut into squares, you know, little 2x2 squares basically. And he ate like, you know, whatever was too much for me at the time, like probably like three or four pieces. I'm like, holy cow. Wow. So I'm like, I'm gonna beat him because this kid's younger than me, so I'm like, I can take him just because, you know, I've got like a year and a half on him. I should be able to at least get one more slice in. And then it became like this big competition. I swear to God, I had like 7 or 8 pieces of the pizza. It's like a, you know, probably a 9-year-old child. And and yeah, we were just putting down. It was crazy.
Yeah, pizza is like an easy, if you eat fast enough, you can eat a lot of pizza.
Yeah,
and you don't eat soda with
that's,
it. So
that's the thing, you got to eat it fast. You got to get
and
it
you
down.
Can't, and you can only use water. If you use anything carbonated, like if you have beer or soda with your pizza, you're going to be full after the first slice. But
yeah,
if you can just drink some water with your pizza, you can take down like 3 or 4 slices before it actually catches up to you. So
yeah, and if you're real competitive, you can just dunk it in the water like they do in those
like Kobayashi with the hot dog buns.
That's still crazy. I watched it on occasion. It's
I like dry heave when I watch those things. Like, there was this one dude who ate like a 1.5-foot long burrito. It might have been like a 2-foot burrito, and he ate it in however much time is impressive. I don't know how much time is impressive to eat a 2-foot burrito, but watching him do it was disgusting. And yeah, I just over like eating a lot, like watching people eat competitively is in one respect impressive and intriguing, but most of me is like, that's gross, and I never want to put that amount of food into my body at that rate.
It's a dangerous thing. I don't know. I eat.
Well, Kobayashi's like a small guy.
I know. I don't understand how he does it. Like, he's a freak of science. But I mean, I eat a lot all the time, and it doesn't do anything to my physical appearance, but it's not good for my insides.
Have you had like your cholesterol done at your physicals or whatever?
I don't have anything
recently.
I don't have anything checked. It's just, I just like, you know.
You might want to get on that, you know, at some point in your 20s, get your cholesterol checked, you know. No. I'm just saying, it's like getting a blood work is pretty. Are you scared of needles?
I don't like needles.
I mean, who does, really?
They hurt, and
yeah.
I have a strong aversion to blood. I get a little queasy. So as long as they get me right, you know, it just hurts. But if they get me wrong and I bleed, that's bad news.
Get you wrong? Like,
oh, I've been stabbed incorrectly twice, and I've only had shots a couple times in my life, and it sucks.
Oh, shots or blood drawn?
Will not get my blood drawn. Cannot.
Yeah.
Absolutely will not.
That's something you should do, though.
I don't know. Maybe once I have insurance again.
Yeah, I guess that would be. Wait, you can't get. Are you 26?
Nearly. I need to see if I need to get on that that ACA before the deadline.
But you're a student, so can't you stay on your parents?
No, just until 26.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
But you don't have it now, then?
I do. But I mean, it's cutting it close to make any sort of appointments. I have a dentist appointment before the end of the year, but you know, it's basically December now. So
yeah, it's coming to be that time. You're going to turn into a full-fledged adult.
Is that the new cutoff? I feel like I hear that every couple of years when I'm about ready to have a birthday. Like, oh, you're turning 18,
well, I mean,
turning 21.
Perks. you level up at every birthday, and there are perks that come with that level up. And this one is probably the last one. Well, getting older is certainly, it's not as exciting, but your experience points are going up. But yeah, I mean, your perk at 26 is that you get your own health insurance, and that's
expensive.
Like a different tier. It's like it's your DLC, really. It's your expanding your gameplay at that point into the open world.
Yeah. May's all excited because she's getting eye care this year. And
I thought it was like an Apple saying like eye care.
Oh no. I think that's
what if Apple sold health insurance, eye care? That would be fucked. Okay, she's just getting eye care.
Wait
for
until
her
the
eyeballs.
Apple glasses come out. I'm sure they'll have something clever like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's getting that, and I'm losing all my insurance, so I need to get that figured out.
Like having good vision care is an insane thing.
Yeah,
because some vision plans will cover like $250 for frames, and if you get your frames at Walmart and you're paying like $50 for those frames, it's like what am I need $250 for, you know?
I'm sure a lot of people don't go to Walmart.
I feel like the majority of the country probably gets them there, but like here in New York, we don't have Walmart. We have Targets and stuff and whatever. But I mean, like Erin, he wears Warby Parker. She does not wear Warby Parker. She wears Oliver Peoples is what she wears. And those are like $500 frames.
Wow.
You know, but with a good, you know, vision, you get $300 off or whatever, you know, and free eye exams. So essentially you're paying $200 for the frames or something. And yeah, I looked once, you know, I went to an optical shop and thought about getting new glasses, but then I went to the eye doctor and like, oh, your prescription has changed by a tiny bit. And I was like, you know what? I'll just use my Ray-Bans from like 2009. That seems fine to me. And I've had the same pair of Ray-Bans since 2009.
When do you need glasses? Is it just for reading?
Driving in movies, which I definitely forget to wear every single time I do that.
Oh, man. The other day, I went to a concert. It was my first show in a really long time. I think my first one all semester, at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
And it was convenient because it was right around the corner from where my classes are. So I've got my school building at about four blocks down and one block to the left, one of the nicer music venues in Northeastern Ohio is there. And the World Is was playing with Me Without You at the venue, and my buddy Connor, he does the merch and the photos for the World Is. So he got me into the show, and I got to stop by and say hello to him in person, which was cool. But before I left the house earlier that day, I was like, you know what? I've had these professional grade earplugs for years, and I've never tried them.
Like, Are you serious?
I've never used them. Yeah, like, they're professional, and I got them for free. Like, they're, like, $300 in-ear,
Are they Westones?
You know, I'd show them to you, but they're in my backpack, which is where they were throughout the entire concert, because I dropped my bag off back into my car before I left, so I didn't have to carry it with me. And then I went to the concert, and my buddy Jared was there, and he put in his, and I'm like, ah, nuts.
So did you just use no ear protection for that whole show?
Yeah, but generally when I'm at that venue, I stand off to the side. Like, I'm not, like, right out in front. And especially for this show, I'm not, like, I wasn't, like, mm-hmm. a huge fan of either band. I don't want to be in the pit or right up close. So,
wow.
I stand off to the side.
Dude, that's one thing.
So
I will never forget ear protection at a show. And if I do, I will go to a convenience store nearby or whatever, or, like, a Duane Reade and buy the earplugs beforehand, because I don't know. Maybe I would be that way with driving and seeing a movie. Like, if I, like, got into a horrible car accident because I couldn't see something, I would never forget my glasses again. But, like, I forgot my earplugs at shows that I used to play or shows that I used to go to, and the ringing in my ears just petrifies me. Just, like, scares me. I'm like, oh god, I've damaged myself forever. And
oh yeah, yeah. Like, when you wake up the next morning, you're like, oh god,
still ringing. And I had a girlfriend once who actually, like, glamorized that feeling. Like, she was like, it was a Pixie show we went to or something, and she. I remember, like, her not tweeting, but, like, saying something in, like, a live journal or something. Like, my ears are still ringing from the Pixies the day after. It's like, wow, you know. And I was like, that's bad. That's not good.
Yeah. It is scary. I used to feel like, I don't know if I felt good about it, but it was, like, a nice reminder that I went to a show the night before. But after I went to a couple shows, that novelty definitely wore off. And it was like, oh, like, tinnitus is a big problem.
Yeah, and no, it's torture, you know.
Yeah, tinnitus is, like, a real thing.
Yeah, no, it's a horrible, horrible, horrible feeling to have that ringing in your ears. And I can't, like, I don't have it badly, but if I have ear, do you have any of tinnitus at all?
I don't know, because if I do, I don't remember what it was like before that. So whatever I have now, like, I feel like if it's quiet enough, you can hear ringing. But
if I have, like, earbuds in and I don't have any music playing, like, if I'm cooking in the kitchen and my podcast ends that I'm cooking and it just, like, beeping, or, like, I can hear it ringing pretty loudly.
And in the
night, in the dead of the night or something, I'll hear it.
Yeah, I mean, I can hear it too, but is that not something all people, like, even people that don't go to loud concerts can hear? Like, I wonder if, like, you know, most people can't hear some sort of ringing, because I do hear it, but it's not something that, like, bothers me, because it's not something that I, you know, it's not something that's going to drive me insane. It's not that loud, but I feel like it's normal, and it's been normal for such a long time that I don't know. It's hard to say. I do have a weird thing in my one ear, and I'm pretty sure it came from a scuba diving accident that took place in a pool at my college, and it's never really been the same since. I came up, you know, when you go down, you gotta, like, you have to, like, pressurize yourself. You're supposed to, like, hold your nose or whatever when you go
equalize.
Down. Yeah, equalize, and as you go down, and then not come up too fast. And, you know, I was very careful about that. But when I came up, even though I came up very slowly, like I was supposed to, my ear, when I hit the top of the water, popped, and it hurt like hell. Like, really hurt. And it bothered me for, like, weeks after. And I'm like, oh, geez. And the doctor checked it out, and he didn't say anything was, like, really wrong. But ever since then, every once in a while, if I hear, like, a certain noise, like, especially if I'm playing music or a podcast from my phone, and the phone is just sitting on my right side, which is on the side of the bad ear, my ear, I don't know how to explain it, but it sort of glitches out. It's almost like it overloads, and, like, it's peaking in my ear. It's a really, really weird experience. And there used to be this when I worked at Under Armour in the back office, it's a pretty quiet room back there, except there's this box with all the networking equipment just kind of like up on the wall on the one side. Mm-hmm. And that used to drive me insane, because when I was sitting at the table and I was, counting the money or whatever it was I had to do at the desk at the end of the night, I'd be sitting there and it's quiet. There's no music playing anymore. And then there's just this thing making this noise up in the corner. And it would drive me absolutely insane, because my ear would just like glitch out. It's a weird thing.
Yeah, there's a point where I was Aaron and I were moving a couple of years ago at this point, and a rock or something hit the side of our car, our moving truck that we were in, and it made the loudest noise. And it was like a firecracker went off inside the cab of the car. Like, I thought like there was an explosion or something inside of the car. That's how loud it was. And we had like the shell shock hearing thing, where your hearing goes away and fades in with a ringing, and your hearing comes back slowly over the course of like 30 seconds, mm-hmm. or whatever. It's like the first time it's ever happened to me. I had to take a second, and from that point on, like whenever Aaron moves, like we have like glass Tupperware or something, whenever that clinks or whatever, I felt it really hurting me. And up until last June, I was just like, I thought I had some hearing loss or some damage or something to my ear. And I went to an audiologist and I had my hearing checked, and they said everything was normal for me for where I am at my age. Hmm. They checked like the sound, the pressure. They used the thing in my ear to measure pressure and the response of my eardrum, and everything was normal. Hmm. So whatever it was, I don't know if it was psychosomatic or something, or if I just thought about it and was now realizing how sensitive I was to it. And I've always been that sensitive to it. It was scary. I think the idea of doing like permanent damage to your body is a very present one in my life. What about you?
Well, the other day I was thinking, would I rather lose my arms or legs? And I decided that, okay, I'd rather lose my legs.
Interesting.
Yeah. Because you're able to do it. Yeah. I mean, you can still do things with your arms. Like, you can't.
How much
you can't use chopsticks with
here?
Your toes. Like, I mean, if someone were to say, okay, you got two options, we're gonna take off and cauterize your limbs, either your arms or your legs, at the torso. Well, which do you choose? I would easily choose legs. Like, it wouldn't even be a question.
Yeah, I mean, I think either way, there are humans that have contributed greatly and can do amazing things for either one. I'll say that. I would probably go with legs too. Although running is so important to me, mm-hmm. I feel like you could obviously find something else. Like there's wheelchair in the Olympics and everything, yeah, like that. So and in marathons, like people use wheelchair and it's fine. So there's other options to either route. There's that guy who can play guitar with his feet better than I can play guitar with my hands. Like, and not even just like a little bit better. The dude is like a virtuoso with his feet, and it makes me so mad and so happy for him at the same time. It's just, like, why can't I can't even play guitar well with my hands? And this dude is just like, just sounding like the greatest guitar player in the world, but he does it with his feet. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I don't even know if that was a good answer to the question you're asking, but it was on my mind. And then it's weird because I was thinking about this like just on my own the other day. I might have even brought it up to May. But then last night, I was on Instagram, and there's that Discover section that just shows you a bunch of weird stuff from all over.
I stay away from that.
I try, but
there be dragons.
Because it's in the search area. So you go to search for somebody, and then you're like, mm-hmm. oh man, the 1975 or John Mayer. Like, you click on something, and then you're on a whatever.
The problem is the key is just to not think anything's cool ever.
Well, the trick is to just delete all of your apps. But
yes.
But last night I looked in. I follow a fair amount of. I follow these accounts for like construction workers,
just like strong guys.
No,
or like,
no.
Or what? Like,
no,
like pinups.
That's so funny, because that's exactly what that was like May's reaction when I told her the same thing. It's I don't know how else to say it though, because it's
there a lot of firemen.
they're these accounts for like really cool and interesting, mind tickling things that people in like the construction industry do, or like logging, you know, like machines that do these
lumberjacks
basically.
But so my understanding is that you're watching strong men do things on Instagram, which is totally fine. Just a section of Instagram I didn't think you were on.
It's less about the actual like workers, but it's more about like the things that they're doing. For example, like, you know, there will be this really cool piece of machinery that dredges something in this really cool way, just like perfectly like carving away the earth, or this guy who walks up this like massive iron pole and then just like lifts it up into the air and in one motion plops it down into another pole and then screws it in, like just like these amazing like crazy dangerous tricks. I don't know, it's kind of like power washing porn in a way, but it's tickling like a different itch, which mostly involves like demolition or some sort of like cool construction thing. Anyway, this actually isn't even really related to what it was that I was looking for, but I think this showed up because I follow accounts like that. If I can find the name of that, I'll share it so people can look and see that I'm not insane. But I found this guy last night who's like really interesting. His name is Rowdy Burton, and
just digging yourself deeper here, man.
Rowdy Burton is he's a really cool fella who's probably around our age, and he was basically he lost his legs when he was 3. He was born with a genetic disorder that, you know, basically like destroyed his legs, and they had to be taken off. So, you know, now he's a full grown person who doesn't have any sort of legs at all. Like he's just kind of, you know, missing from what we consider our middle down. But he's super cool. Oh, yeah. And he rides these one wheel things. You might have seen these if you follow like Casey Neistat or Sean Duras or any of those vloggers that were.
I have some friends that ride those at work.
One wheels, yeah. Really?
Yeah, it's a big thing in the city.
Wow. Like I didn't think, I guess that those would probably be one of the better ones in the city because of all the curbs and the roads and whatnot. But
my friends have definitely eaten shit, yeah, and destroyed their wrists, you know, riding that thing. But
yeah,
they
but
like
they're
it.
The biggest wheel like that you can get on something like that. Cause like the boosted boards have very small wheels and, and those little, you know, the Alibaba brand hover boards are also not very safe, and they're not good on curves or any kind of rough terrain. But yeah, the one wheel
Rowdy,
is cool. But he
Rowdy looks so strong.
He's super strong.
His arms are just ridiculously jacked.
When you see him, I was watching some YouTube videos of him last night. He works for a company that does some kind of charity work, I think, and he was talking, and like, you know, he's there on screen, and he, you know, like any person, able-bodied person that has legs would do, he sort of paces, except that he uses his arms to walk. So when he's pacing or he's just kind of standing around, he'll just put his entire body's weight on one hand. Like, it's no problem. It's insane. Mm-hmm. But no, I just bring that up because, you know, I was thinking about, like, what would I rather lose, my arms or my legs? And, you know, it's, as an able-bodied person, with all of my limbs, it's, you know, kind of fun for me to think about, but it's probably not as interesting to somebody like him. But also seeing him is like kind of inspiring in a way, because you can see like this person is able to do, you know, pretty much everything, and he's able to get around, and he's ridiculously strong in his arms. It's kind of cool. He's an interesting guy.
Yeah. No, I think running, there's a guy in the Olympics who wears like the blades on his feet for running and stuff. And I mean, there's the possibilities are only expanding, you know.
Yeah.
For people that are in those situations.
I kind of like I had a weird thought when I saw that guy running in the Olympics. I'm like, man. I mean, it's terrible that he lost a limb, and it's amazing that he's able to compete at this level with, you know, his handicap and having the prosthetic. But at the same time, like, does that give him almost like a slight advantage? Because he's this is probably really ignorant of me, and I don't know anything about his like physiology, but I mean, he has a prosthetic limb that isn't, you know, he doesn't have to worry about that limb twisting an ankle or, you know, cramping up in the calf on that side. When I saw him running in the Olympics, I thought about that. I'm like, I'm sure that he has like 1,000 other things that he has to contend with that other runners don't for that reason. but also mm-hmm. like it's I looked at him like the bionic man. I'm like, this guy has machine yeah. attached to him. He, you know, he has an advantage, just technological feat.
Yeah, I mean, I think that crosses most people's minds, you know, mm-hmm. When they see something like that. It was very impressive. But yeah, I mean, ankle fatigue is a thing, mm-hmm. you know, and if he doesn't have ankles, is he getting fatigued? You know, he is in a different way, probably. But yeah, it's a lot of interesting thoughts, and I'm sure there's some think pieces by informed people out there.
Yeah, maybe
and probably a lot by people who aren't informed as yeah. well. So
yeah,
We can probably it's probably something we could read up on.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I don't know. I you know, I'm fortunate to not have to give this whole lot of thought. But
right. Well, that's why I was asking.
Yeah.
If you like, because. I don't know. I just think about like, you know, like something being in the walls a lot, you know, like that, like, or like there's a leak in my ceiling and I'm wondering about the mold in your house. I think we talked about this last week mm-hmm. or when you're talking about the mold that was forming in your bottom floor of your house or something like that.
Yeah,
it was just
no updates left, but I'm sorry if I was giving you nightmares.
Yeah. Well, it's not just that. I mean, it's like anything, you know, anything could happen. Anything could be brewing inside your body and just not know it or whatever. It's scary. Bodies are scary and frightening, and they're wonderful, but it's like any other machine. Something, anything could go wrong.
Yeah,
at any time.
Yeah, they sure can. It's something I just choose not to think about. I spend a lot of time sitting, so I don't have to really worry about my legs getting twisted or anything in some sort of running accident. And yeah.
Getting struck by a car and so
yeah,
I wore headphones today, and I usually only do it my long runs because I have to get some podcasts listened to, mm-hmm. and I just want to, you know, make the time go a little bit faster or something. So I started mixing in headphone workouts. Typically I don't, but I do now a little bit. And obviously today I just looked up and there was a car taking a, you know, from oncoming traffic, taking a left-hand turn and like towards me.
Oh God.
And yeah. And like, you know, I like to think that either one of us would have noticed the other had it been any closer. And it truthfully wasn't that close, but the fact was I was not paying attention when I should have been. And it's just like, you look up from that, you're like, man, anything could have happened there. If I had like stopped it, or if I hadn't like stopped at that last intersection or whatever, I would have been in the wrong place at the wrong time. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely making me second guess wearing headphones again.
Yeah, but I mean, would you have heard him coming?
Yes. Okay. I would have heard him before. Like I heard him when he was on me, mm-hmm. you know, but I did not. And I would have been looking at him. I mean, I wasn't focusing intently on the podcast. I was more just looking down at the ground at that moment and not looking up, but I would have heard him. My ears would have told me that car was taking a left-hand turn sooner than when he was directly in front of me. Like he passed by and I probably had like 6 feet to spare. So like he or she was making a left-hand turn knowing that where I was. They didn't honk the horn, so they didn't think it was that close. There was no screeching of brakes or whatever. It looked like they were trying to beat a yellow light or something like that. And I was trying to beat my flashing hand on the crosswalk sign. So it was more a case of like, well, nobody's really to blame, although I was in a crosswalk. And also I didn't get hit. So nothing bad happened in this case, but it just made me think about how close, like why I don't wear headphones.
What kind of headphones were you wearing? Were these AirPods or?
No, wireless. I would never wear AirPods while working out.
No? Okay.
they get so grody.
Oh, gross. Okay.
Yeah, they're gross looking.
You should, I mean, there are some that you can get that don't block out so much noise. I mean, some people want that.
The Bose ones that I use are, they're the best ones that I found. I tried out probably 6 or 7 pairs of wireless headphones, wireless earbuds specifically, when I was looking for them. And the Bose ones let in the most outside noise. And every reviewer made sure to say that. And then when I tried them out, it's sure shit. You know, like when I went on the train, sound is leaking in like crazy, which I like. Like the Beats ones, the Beats X ones, and the Power Beats, those are more isolating. Like they create like a pretty hard seal on your ear mm-hmm. when the earpiece is in them, which is cool for bass if you like that kind of thing, but not cool for not getting hit by cars.
What's that brand that gets advertised on the Accidental Tech podcast all the time? Those like bone conduction headphones. You seen those?
I have a coworker with those, and I think they're mostly horseshit, but they It's like, if you want your music to sound kind of bad, try these.
Huh. Marco vouches for him. He says he likes him for his walks and things.
I'm sure he, but he also has like 7 pairs. He also has like, I think he has the MDX 1000s and the Mark II and the Mark III on those. Like, I don't,
yeah.
He's got a lot of things to spare and a lot of technology just lying around, I feel like.
One of his suggested sets of headphones were on sale for Amazon last weekend, and I didn't pick them up.
The Behringer ones?
I don't know. It was one of the sets that he likes, and Jason Tate from the Chorus podcast, he likes those ones as well. I didn't end up picking them up, but they were like $99 or something. They were like $40 off.
Yeah, they're fine.
Yeah, I need to get a new pair. My Sennheisers here are falling apart.
Are those noise canceling? Are those the 280s? What do you have, HD 280s?
202s. These are pretty old.
Oh, okay. The 280s are great. I have 380s, the Sennheiser ones, and those are fantastic. Yeah. I'm totally in love with these headphones.
I wish that I like these a lot, and I think they sound totally fine, but I wish that the ear cups were a little bit bigger. They're kind of oblong. They're not really round, so they sort of, they kind of pinch the top of my ears a bit, so they hurt if they're on for a long time.
That's why I gave up my Audio Technicas, because we would be recording like a Bantha Fodder episode, or I would be demoing, and these Audio Technicas, even though they were over-ear cans, they, for some reason, would just tickle the top of my ear for long enough that it would physically pain me to wear them for more than like an hour or an hour and a half. So if you're doing like a 3-hour demo session and not taking enough breaks or whatever, or like a full day editing and not taking breaks, it was just excruciating. But these, since I switched to these 380 Pros, like the ear fatigue I get now is from listening for too long and just sound rather than physically my cartilage and my ear hurting me.
Yeah, that's the worst. I really hate that feeling because it takes a little while to go away.
You don't have to, it doesn't have to happen. Like you should definitely get rid of those headphones if they're hurting you. You should not suffer that way. It's like shoes, you know, you don't wear shoes that are hurting you, man.
They hurt the most when I was doing variable bitrate because I would be doing very long edit sessions. So those, you know, I don't have to do that quite as much anymore. And I use these during my work meetings on Mondays and when I record with you, and that's just about it. Like they're more of an isolation thing at this point. I don't use them much because I have an iMac and it sounds pretty good. The speakers in the back. So when I'm listening to stuff or when I'm editing, actually, I do it through the onboard speakers. But
yeah, that's something I forget about a lot. And what a lot of people are saying about mixes and mixing is that you should get good monitors, desktop monitors for mixing something. And I totally forget that that's a way to do it because I live in a small apartment with one other person. And before that, I was living in a small apartment with 3 other people.
Yeah.
So it's like if I had monitors and I was listening to music, I would be driving people crazy.
I know. That's, I think really for like an audio listening setup, the most important thing you can get is a good set of speakers. Like, overall, like you can get all, this might have been on a podcast the other day, maybe it was ATP a couple weeks ago, but you can shell out all this dumb money for this dumb audiophile equipment that is going to make little to absolutely zero difference in the sound of your setup, but 90% of it is going to come from the like quality of the audio that's being played and the speakers that you're using. Like the input and the output are the biggest thing. Having gold plated wires and
such bullshit,
all that other junk. Like
I learned that when I was like 15, just playing guitar, that ridiculous. The gold plated stuff doesn't matter.
It's just dumb. Yeah. So yeah, I'd like to get a nice pair of studio monitors at some point. Be nice just to, you know, just not that I do a whole lot of mixing, but I think when you mix on the computer, it sounds a little more tinny than it probably is, you know,
with your built-in speakers.
Yeah, like the iMac doesn't have like super great low end, and
there's 2 subwoofers on, there's one on each side. Yeah, so like but they're all built into the same speaker module, so it's like
it sounds great. Fine, and it's probably comparable to how most people are going to be listening to a podcast. And when you're doing like vocal audio, it's not going to make that big of a deal anyway. Like I'm not even doing any EQ. I just don't want to like over compress something. That's basically what I'm checking for.
Yeah.
And,
I remember Zach McNeese, he's like an editor. He's a producer here in New York, but he used to do a lot of music, and he's pivoted mostly to podcasts, I feel like, now. Mm-hmm. He does West Wing Weekly. He does Here's a Thing with Alec Baldwin. I'm sure he does a bunch of others too that I'm just not listening. He did a couple of song exploders rather as well. And he, I remember him texting me being like, the secret to mixing podcast is just mixing with headphones all the time. Like, it's something it took him a while to realize, because he had a nice, really nice studio set up with monitors and everything. And he was doing music for the longest time with monitors. And I think once he switched to headphones, he realized how much easier it was to listen or edit and mix.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, honestly, you should mix podcasts through Apple earpods. Because,
yeah.
Like, that's going to be the majority of what people are listening
maybe
through.
Maybe Apple wired buds, because the AirPods, you're going to get latency. You don't want to use Bluetooth.
Not then. AirPods, earpods.
Okay.
That's my accent. AirPods. Sounds like AirPod and earpod are the same thing.
Got some Californians making those marketing decisions.
Mm-hmm. The AirPods? Yeah, bro, my AirPods.
did you listen to a lot of podcasts last week since your mom's in town and whatnot?
I increased my speed on all my podcasts. I'm listening to pretty much everything at 2x speed to listen to all my podcasts.
Oh boy.
Yes.
But you stayed caught up through the holiday?
Well, I mean, relatively. Okay. What's my queue right now is pretty abysmal. I'm perpetually, how many behind? I'm still listening to October 29th right now. Wait, that's not possible. That's because Tiny Desk published, like, finally somehow Tiny Desk is just catching up on their feed and publishing things from October.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they just did a random post. Unerased from, so November 27th is what I'm listening to now.
Okay.
And today, as we're recording, is Friday, December. Oh, it's November 30th today.
Jeez. Yeah, I'm still
3 days behind.
About a week behind. I didn't listen to a whole lot because of the holiday, and, you know, had, like, you know, some midterm projects and stuff that I had to finish up. But I also had to listen to that audiobook, which is
the Stephen King one.
Yeah, which is about, I think it's like 15 hours of audio. So I was, mm-hmm. I would have made a pretty good chunk of my podcast listening for the week. But
you said it was James Franco that was narrating it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be talking about this on Deanna's other podcast at some point soon, but I listened to The Dead Zone on audiobook format because I don't apparently have the time to read, try as I might. So yeah, I downloaded the audiobook. I didn't look to see who the narrator was. I didn't even think about it. I didn't think it would matter. And maybe it didn't, but it was a little distracting sometimes to hear James Franco reading the book. Cause most of the time it's fine. Like, you know, when he's reading most of the characters, it's fine. He does light voice work for the different characters. Very light, but enough to,
can he do female voices any different?
Just softer. Just
that's funny.
Softer speech. But when he did Dr. Wysak, that really pulled me out because I think he recorded that in either 2016 or 2017, which was around the time that he was making the movie The Disaster Artist.
No, so he just did Tommy Wiseau.
He did the exact same voice for the Polish dude in this book.
That's so funny.
It was so distracting. So distracting. Because his voice for Tommy Wiseau is so iconic now. Like, I don't know. It pulled me out of it a little bit.
That's
but
great.
Otherwise,
did you
fine.
Have other choices? Like, was there another version of the audiobook besides his?
Because after I found out it was him, I looked.
That book has been out forever. There's got to be somewhere
else.
This
is the first time it ever came to audiobook format.
No.
Yeah.
I don't believe that. There's got to be a book on tape somewhere.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they said first time on an audiobook format. And I'm inclined to believe it.
I believe
it. But if it did come out, it would have been on, you know, like the 14 cassette tape set. And
yes.
And I don't know. I would have to... I'm sure I would have to find some crazy place where they've digitized that and and download it, make sure it's the right format so I can get into books. Oh yeah, so I've got some issues with the whole Apple Books format. Like, mm-hmm. You know, they've got
their iBooks or whatever.
Yeah, it's not iBooks anymore though. It's just books. And
ew.
And unless you update to Mojave, you have books on your iPhone, you have iBooks on your Mac. And they're completely different. So as it is now, I'm still on, what is it, High Sierra? Is that what precedes? Yeah. Yeah, I'm on a High Sierra. So in my situation, I still had to open iTunes. And I had to import the files into iTunes. Then I had to find the files in the library and go to the settings for all of the tracks. I just did a select all and did it all at the same time. And then you had to specifically change the type in a drop-down box to audiobook. And then they disappear from your library, and you have to go to a different library to find the audiobook, make sure it's there, make sure that it's like grouped correctly. And there are some major grouping bugs in audiobooks on iTunes for Mac. Like, it's completely broken unless you use one specific view. Like, you can, there's different like filters that you can use for sorting and stuff, but unless you sort it in this one way, it will group, or it will ungroup your books, and it'll basically make it look like you have 40 some copies of that book in your library. It's really messed up. And then to get it on your phone, you have to plug in your phone to the computer. And then you have to open up a menu. You have to go to the audiobooks there. You have to check a box that says manually add books to your library, because it's not like I didn't get this from their store or something. It's from Audible. Mm-hmm. So then you had to, like, I don't know, you basically just dragged and dropped the book that you wanted. You waited for it to sync. And then when you get on your phone, you have to wait. I had to wait like 20 minutes for it to finally show up in my books app. It's ridiculous. And then when I'm listening, most of the listening I was doing was like either in bed or on my way to school. So I'd be listening on CarPlay, and CarPlay is great. And, you know, I would think that, like, of all the apps that would work perfectly on CarPlay, it would be Apple's. But every time the track would change, it would change my CarPlay display from the player with the, you know, the little progress meter and the artwork and the, you know, the title and all. It would switch it back to the main menu of the books app on CarPlay. Mm-hmm. Every single time. And that's probably not like a huge concern. I don't necessarily need to see what, it doesn't even give you the track number, but I like it to be there because it's less distracting than a menu with a bunch of different things on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just did this every single time. And some of the tracks are only 30 seconds long. And the only way to get back into the thing and to see how long that next track is going to be is to click back into Now Playing. You had to do it for every single track. It was terrible. Not a great experience.
Yeah, not fantastic. That's for
sure. God. But I didn't really know what else to do. I wasn't going to sign up for Audible to read this book, because I don't know if I'll be able to commit to any more Stephen King podcast appearances just for the pressure and the time constraints. But I did enjoy it. It was a good book. But I'm excited to talk about it with Deanna.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what I could do for that show still. Like,
what's left? She had a lot of it taken up. It looks like a lot of the spots were claimed. Because I asked her, I'm like, well, you know what? I could, like, I like the story. I would be inclined to record about the TV show or the movie that was made about it. But I guess that was taken. Yeah.
Hmm.
I don't know. There's not a whole lot.
Let's see what's still available in the old spreadsheet.
Thinner, Skeleton Crew.
Thinner. Oh my God, I should read Thinner, because I had that video cassette sitting around my dad's shelf, and I would get freaked out by the video cassette just being there. My dad had a lot of VHS tapes.
Yeah.
As a kid.
Oh man, Thinner. At my dad's the other day, he and I were looking through his video cabinet, and at some point he must have found my VHS collection in the spare room in one of the drawers and moved it into the cabinet. I forgot about all the great VHSs I have in there. I have like several different copies of Aliens 1, 2, and 3, like both the first and second editions of each release. They got the Kung Pao, got the Abyss, and there's some good movies in there.
Ooh. The Abyss was great.
I love the Abyss.
I watched a lot of movies off of those video cassettes. My dad at one point was running like a video rental place in Boston.
Oh.
Like a video store, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And after it kind of, well, they had to like rotate their stock or like get rid of a lot of movies to make space for other ones or whatever. We would just end up with milk crates, like 50 milk crates of VHS tapes. And one of my jobs as like a 7-year-old or whatever was to take my best friend's mom's laptop and catalog all of these movies one by one, just writing them down to make a big spreadsheet, an Excel spreadsheet, which I did not know was Excel at the time, of every single movie. And so I just spent hours, days and hours down there just cataloging VHS tapes.
That sounds like so much fun.
I know, like, as an adult now who loves organizing things, that would have been great for me. But as a kid, that's the most monotonous work you could ever have.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it sounds kind of rough as a kid. But I don't know. I think I would have liked it because I used to just do that in my room myself. Like, I'm sure I can still find the... I would have just notebook pages that had a list of, like, all my coins and my... Well, I've been recently getting back into Yu-Gi-Oh cards, and and I've been finding, like, my lists, and, you know, I've got my cards categorized with little labels in every section and everything. It's been... This affliction's been part of my life for a long time.
Oh, my God, dude. I have the thinner ebook.
Oh, put your name in there.
Oh, man. But then I have to do it.
Yeah.
And then I have to commit to this. Yeah, then I have to read a book. Then I have to read a book, Jake.
Yeah, but...
Then I have to read a
book. You have a while, because, look, like, the post date for that is going to be, like, April. You've got time. I'm putting you in.
Dude, that's... It took me... Don't you dare touch this thing right now. Oh, my God. I can see you typing on the spreadsheet. Motherfucker. Oh, God. I'm done. This is it. All right. I'll plug my iPad in and get the ebook on there.
His books are quick. God,
look. His books are quick? I don't think so.
Yeah.
You ever try to read? I mean, they're fun reads.
Have I ever tried to read? No.
Have you tried to read 63 or whatever, the JFK book? That was a good one. That was like 800 pages. They're all like 800 pages, you know?
Thinner is 309 pages. King. 309.
How many pages was Bloodline? That took me like 6 months to read.
Oh, God. You know what? I think it's going to be faster. Just pull it off my shelf.
This is so funny to me.
Bloodline by Claudia Gray. 330.
So it's going to take me less than 6 months to read this book.
332. So yeah, you've got that's Bloodline.
Like, God bless Claudia Gray. She's a fantastic writer. But that book was very dry with all the politics stuff. And I imagine Stephen King will go a little bit faster.
I think so. Man. I mean, by the time when I really started getting into Dead Zone, I was like, man, I miss books. Like, this is great.
Yeah.
This is a great way to spend time.
Yeah. All right. I'll get Thinner up on there on my Kindle app. I have it as a Mobi, so I'll have to read it in the Kindle app.
You could just convert it.
Read this. Convert it? You can convert ebooks?
Yeah, get Calibre for your Mac, or send it to me and I can do it, because I know you hate to install things.
Well, no, I don't mind installing things. I don't like installing drivers.
Well, and I don't know if that this requires that, but that's the name of the app that you
like
want.
Audio, things that like change the way my computer works. Those tick me off. Okay, Deanna, you got me. Thinner, March 19th. Is that the record date or the post date?
She's got two columns there, so the record date's in the first, but she doesn't have one set for that yet. I think you're good. I think you're fine.
Okay.
It looks like she recorded quite a few this week, but is she reading all this? Like, how is she able to do this?
I think
this?
She has read all this.
What?
That's the thing. I think Deanna has an encyclopedic knowledge of Stephen King, hence the creation of her podcast, which is called the Chat Cemetery. We haven't even mentioned the name of her podcast.
Yeah, we probably should.
Chat Cemetery.
We're sharing the hosting.
Yeah, if you are
on this,
a Stephen
so
King fan,
we've got a stake. Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't decided. I was thinking that we're a network, but we're not so much a podcast network as we are a collective, I would say.
Mm, hey, that's good. Oh, kinda like that's something.
That's how Radiotopia does it. You know, they're a collective.
Yeah. There's got to be a good URL somewhere for a collective. I'll look into it.
Like an IVE.IVE. We can collect.IVE.
See, there's a good name in the podglomerate, but it's been taken.
What do you, podglomerate's a thing?
Yeah, it's
oh, like podcasm, like,
yeah, but you know, like a conglomerate of different folks, but for podcast.
Podglomerate.
Except that it's taken by actually a pretty good little network.
Conpodlerate. Think of the worst names possible.
We'll figure out something, but yeah, in any case, we've got guess we may as well recommend her other shows too. We've moved her old show Misaligned over. So Misaligned was a show that she did with some other friends for the Modern Vinyl Network. I think it's done now. I don't think it's coming back. But we've moved it over and archived it so that it stays active. And then of course, Welcome to Geekdom,
which I was on this evening.
Yeah. I'm excited. I like when Mike's on that show. You're a good guest on that show.
I talk too much.
Well, glad somebody gives you an opportunity to talk about them damn Marvel movies.
Yeah, because God knows we don't do it enough. In everyday life. Speaking of that, did that Infinity War trailer drop too? The new Infinity War trailer?
God, I hope not. So much has happened today that I just haven't. I can't. I watched the Thank You Next video. I listened to the 1975 record a dozen times, and that's about it.
I just Googled Avengers 4 trailer and CNET, my favorite source for news. I hate them so much. The Avengers 4 trailer may never arrive. Let's just all accept it, which I think would be so goddamn cool if they did not do any trailers for this movie.
That would be bonkers. I think the world would go insane.
I mean, Avengers 3 was a trailer for Avengers 4. You know, it was just do that. Just say, everybody go watch it. And, you know, that'll make, like, if you don't want to watch Avengers 4 after watching Avengers 3, there's something seriously wrong with you.
Mm-hmm. Did you
see, I'm looking at you.
Did you see that, I don't know if it was Saved You a Click or one of the similar Twitter accounts, but some website said something about, like, the Mandalorian Star Wars show that's in production.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the headline was like, find the release date, the cast, and all the info or whatever on this thing. And the Saved You a Click basically just regurgitated the headline, except it doesn't tell you the release date, the cast, or any of this other info.
I hate the internet, man. The internet was a mistake. The internet was a huge mistake.
Yeah. Should have stuck with what was like the Usenet? That was,
I don't even know what that is.
It was like the early stages of the internet where it's just very small communities and it wasn't like this big sprawling open thing. It was still fairly closed off and all that. But yeah. As much joy as I get from the internet, it gives me so much more pain.
Yeah, man. I guess we have podcasts. That's cool.
Yeah, I like podcasts. Podcasts are nice because they're insular little things. Like, you don't, we've talked about this before, but I just like not having to be part of the greater thing. If I can pull something off of the internet, I think that's valuable. But when that thing has to be on the internet, like some sort of social network or community that requires your constant attention, that's less healthy, I think. Like I tried getting back on the chorus.fm forums past week or so, because it's a good place to talk about music, and I don't really talk much about music, but the 1975 has had their record come out now. And over the past week, I've been listening to it. It's like the only place where you can talk to other people who have also heard it before it comes out. So I don't know. It was nice to duck in there a little bit, but now I'm like, I have no reason to go there anymore. Cause it's, I can't keep up. You just can't keep up. And with all the other stuff that they're talking about, I was there for a very specific reason and now I'm out.
Mm-hmm. It's nice that it exists.
Yeah. No, it's a great forum. And actually, it's one of my all-time favorite websites as far as design goes. I think it's brilliant. I don't know. I mean, Jason Tate is very, very talented. And I wish people would have been able to see his third version of Absolute Punk that never came to be before Absolute Punk got bought back and then shut down. But I think Chorus is a really good spiritual successor to that. It's just beautiful. God, the dark mode is amazing. And he does all these clever things. And yeah, I just like to browse the website just to look at the the features and all the stuff that he can do. It's wild.
Oh, that's what I wanted to talk about. The Venetia Fair blogs.
Oh yeah, you found them.
I found them. Okay, so I don't think I mentioned this in the show, but I was just curious. Like, I was remembering when I used to write more frequently and like what was a good example of my writing. And I was like, oh, those Venetia Fair blogs that I wrote on MySpace. Like, I used the MySpace blogging feature, and apparently, I tried to log into my MySpace, and I successfully did, but they deleted all the blogs.
Yeah.
They did like a 3-year period where they allowed you to download the blog content.
And I'm sure they emailed you. Probably not an email you check anymore,
yeah,
but
probably not. Yeah, my Hotmail account or whatever it was I had to use. But yeah, and so I missed the 3-year window. Nuts. And I was like, God damn it. I thought these things were gone forever. And I was just like, you know what? Maybe, just maybe, I have them on my computer saved. And I did. I saved at some point in 2011. I opened up Safari on my PowerBook G4. I press File, Save As, and I saved the HTML of my entire blog page. And everything is there.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's not impressive, you know.
No, it's great that you found it, because it seemed like, I mean, you weren't devastated, but it seemed like you were at least a little bummed out that piece of your history was gone.
Yeah, well, more for the sake of the band, not, like, I mean, it's a good nostalgia piece, if anything, for the people that were involved. I think the language used, while not, like, vulgar or anything like that, is just, like, a little stupid. Like, there's a lot of slang we use in the band, like, whereas, like we used to say blast off a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And blast could mean anything. It could be, you know, like drinking a lot, which is not common, but like it was more about selling a lot of merch and like doing really well. It's kind of the way the word, oh, did you blast off tonight? Or like, it could be like a sex thing, I guess. It could be.
Yeah,
anything.
You got to be careful. That's going to haunt you in like a Supreme Court hearing or something.
When I'm being sworn in as Supreme Court Justice. Hey, if Kavanaugh can do it, anybody can.
What is boofing?
That's not on there. Thankfully, I didn't use that. Yeah, but like blasting off is frequently mentioned. Like we used to have this thing about the word local, which was like if, because you know, like a local opener is typically like not a great band all the time. Sometimes there are great local openers, but like being local, like was defined as like a band that never leaves their hometown, never goes on tour, never does this, never does that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just, and it was a substandard, you know, classification of being a musician or whatever. There's like touring and there's local. And we would call things local if they were lame. As if something was lame, like, oh, local, dude, or something like that. And like, oh, look, I would never be local. And it was a very insider language. And I'm trying to think of the other stupid terms we use, but there's a lot in there. And I think I'll post it as like a nostalgia piece, like the blogs. Mm-hmm. I'll post them again probably 10 years, you know, at the 10-year point, which will be 2020, I guess. I'll send them to Sam now. Like, Sam will get them. But also, one thing that really made me angry was the fact that I used to put a double space after every period. Did you ever do that?
No, definitely not. That really bothers me.
It bothers me immensely now, but it's a thing that I probably did until around that time, until like 2010, 2011. And I don't know why. I learned it as a kid. I think it was done for typewriters or something like that, you know, and it's like an old tech, like
a lot of older people
technique.
Still do this. Like my grandpa does it on text.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder if that's more because of the double period thing, like hitting the space bar. My dad puts like 4 periods minimum after any sentence. It's atrocious. He doesn't know that like 2 spaces creates a period, and then he puts in 2 more. Ellipses is like a boomer thing. I don't know why, but if you look at any boomers, like handwriting or notes, there's just a lot of ellipses going around, a lot of quotation marks around words that don't need quotation marks because they're not quotes. It's boomers are weird.
Yeah,
they're like aliens.
They really are. And like the ellipses just reads like condescending, I think, to most.
Yeah,
most people
or like
now. So it's like it's a
condescending or like vague or mysterious. You're like, why are you being vague about like the movie that you want to go see or something like that? It's like, let's go to the movies. ... You're like, what? Okay, like
sure.
Are you suggesting something else, Dad? Like what? But yeah,
no,
so like double space after every period. So now I have the chance to edit these things. So I'll probably edit out some of the more unsavory things. There was like a lot of weird, like not overtly misogynist things, but like things that just don't fly very well anymore. Like the girls were being really annoying, so we put them in their place, you know, like or something stupid. Not necessarily, not saying like kitchen afterwards or something like that or anything that sexist, but just like as if they should be quiet or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like the girls are being really mean to us or something like that. So those things would probably need to be edited out, even though now they're in this podcast.
Yeah.
it's fine. I don't care. Like, I mean, it was, there's lots of things to not be proud about in our digital pasts.
Right.
And I've tried to cleanse most of those things from the internet.
Yeah.
A lot of live journal posts had to be deleted and edited.
Oh, geez. Yeah. I'm glad I missed out on that whole thing. I had a, what was the name of that social network prior to MySpace? Started with a K.
Zanga, right?
Oh, yeah. Zanga. I was thinking Kazaa, but that's something. That's
Kazaa was the pre, LimeWire.
Okay. Yeah. Zanga.
Post Napster, pre LimeWire.
I had a Zanga account, but I never, like, I set it up and then never used it. You know,
Friendster was another one, right?
Yeah, I never used that.
I didn't either. I did not. Zanga, people would try and get me on Zanga, and I think I logged in once, and then some bot messaged me, and I was like, this girl says she wants to have sex with me. And I was like, you know, 18, 17 in college, and this person's like, oh, that's a bot? That's not a person. Mm. I was like, oh, that's why she found me after I immediately created my account.
Right. I would get that on AIM a lot. A lot of those AIM bots.
Yeah, report them for spam and block them. Hear that door slam. Oh, man, that's nostalgic. I would probably set that as my text tone, I guess, if I ever use text tones.
Yeah, I talked to my sister about that yesterday because she had some kind of tone on her phone. And she's like, I feel like everybody has a different, you know, tone on their phones. You should be able to tell whose is whose. I'm like, I think anybody that uses a noise on their phone is insane.
It's like their Patronus. Yeah, I mean, if you're not using your Vibe Switch in the year 2018 of our Lord, then you are not functional as a human being.
Vibrate is the perfect feature. Like vibrate does take up more battery than a chime. That's a fact. But another fact is that batteries aren't a problem in today's day and age. And when you have a phone in your pocket on vibrate, you can feel it. You know when somebody's trying to get to you because you can feel it, and nobody else can feel it. And if you're out in your, you know, in your kitchen doing something and you have your phone sitting there, like, you can hear it vibrating on the table. Like, it does the same thing, and it's not going to bother everybody in the world. That said, my boss, Eric, we kind of have like this little internal podcast at Breaker called Two Peeves in a Pod, which is really clever.
That's a great podcast idea.
I know.
I'm surprised nobody had that before you guys.
I know.
Congrats.
Kudos to Leah. I think it's mostly her project, but she has, she'll have like a different person on. Mostly it's been people who work for Breaker to talk about one of their peeves. And Eric's was, when somebody has their vibrate on and they leave it on a shared desk.
Oh, well, I mean, it's better than a freaking text tone. God damn.
Yeah. But I, as an extension of that, I think he went on to like, you know, it's okay if it's there, but when it keeps like it's ringing and they don't stop it, they're choosing not to pick it up, but they don't turn it off, which is also a problem.
Oh,
when the phone is just ringing. Like, I don't know how many times you've ever had that in your experience in retail, but God, especially at checkout, like they're like, oh, well, you know, it's rude for me to answer the phone while I'm at checkout. At least they know that much. But then they let the damn thing ring forever and it's super loud. And it's like a train noise or, you know, Hank Williams song or something.
I think also on iPhone it vibrates to the music sometimes, I think, depending on the song
you can set, like the way you can customize your vibrations. You could like come up with your own thing.
I have ringtones. I know when my mom's texting me and I know when Aaron's texting me because I have customized their ringtones and I can feel it in my pocket.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool. Like I haven't been able to find that feature since I reset my phone last. But can you still do the thing where you can like, you know, kind of like tap out the vibration that you want?
Yes, you can. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I have to find that. I love that. Totally. That's such a neat little fun thing.
It's great. I love it. Oh, man. So those MySpace blogs are found and they're going to be edited. And I don't know what I'll do with them. I remember when I was writing them out, Ben would just be like, why don't you use that on a medium that is good instead of MySpace? You know, like, as MySpace was still there, it was like the tail end of MySpace, but it was still happening. And I think my reasoning, because like Tumblr still wasn't there yet, you know, as far as a blogging method. I didn't enjoy Blogspot. I didn't think, it was just more people were on MySpace still. Mm-hmm. Like Sam would still run, like answer comments or whatever and on the MySpace. And it was just a place to be. And I wanted to draw more attention to my MySpace at that point. And the Tumblr was just, there weren't enough people. So it just didn't seem like a way. Didn't seem like valid at the time. I just remember inserting photos was a lot more difficult in Tumblr back then.
Oh yeah.
And I had a lot of photos in the blogs themselves. There were a lot of pictures that I was taking and uploading. to these things.
The Tumblr editor was terrible for a really long time. No, you know, no offense to Marco or anything. He had a lot else to work on, but it was just, it was a disaster for very, very long time. And even after they added the option for Markdown and they kind of improved the way that photos were handled. Like there were still always problems. Like the photos would be, they'd, you know, upload fine, but then they'd be blurry, but only if you use their uploader. If you used a different method, like it would be fine. Like there was like another way that you could upload the photo, or if you pulled them in from an external source and then just embedded them through HTML, it was totally fine. It's actually probably still the most frequently visited article on my blog is how to get around blurry photos on Tumblr. Like it still gets tons of hits because people are always Googling for it and try to figure out why the hell it's happening.
Didn't Marco make Tumblr the way it is now?
He was one of the primary, he was like the lead developer when it first kicked off.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. It was like one of his first gigs out of college, I believe. Yeah. Last 30 days, I've had 400 visits to how to work around Tumblr's blurry image embeds and text posts.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's like more streams than I get an old best friend in a month.
It's nuts. And my blog hasn't been on Tumblr in years. Very, very long time.
I wonder how many hits I have this month. Old best friend on Spotify. Let's see.
Oh, man. Looking at my blog now, I'm like, I have all these projects that I want to do over winter break, including a stream. Twitch stream of The Dig with you at some point. I think that'll be fun. But I just saw my...
Oh, yes. That's going to be really fun.
I think it'll be a blast. I think we're going to be really terrible at it.
Yeah, but like that's going to be like when I used to co-pilot with Ben or something in a game. Like I love co-piloting.
Mm-hmm. I like that too. Like games. I love watching. I like watching somebody play almost as much as I like playing. Probably in most cases, I like it more. Like I like just following along because I'm able to like catch things that they're not because they're focused on moving the character around. It's like when you're sitting in a car.
But the commentary will be great as well as our appreciation for the art and everything.
Oh yeah. I'm excited for that. But I'm looking at my blog now and I redid the layout of it and the color scheme of it a couple months ago and I already hate it. I'm going to go back, I think.
Yeah. I figured out the source of hum for my interface.
Oh yeah, what was up with that?
Well, I mean, it's probably you'll hear it in this audio file for like a certain point because I was noticing when I wasn't talking that I had like around a negative 50 dB hovering thing, and I was like, what is that? And then it's something to do with my XLR cable. I think it's the breakaway point on my interface. There might be something wrong with it, but there also might not be. But if I move my XLR cable a certain amount of distance away from one of my power cables or like where my power cables sit or run, the buzzing stops and clears up.
Oh, it's probably just like a shielding issue on your cable.
It could be. I don't know which aspect of the device is not working. I never really had shielding issues before or like these things, but
well, and have you tried another cable?
I don't think I have another XLR cable in this apartment. Okay. But yeah, it's interesting because I remember at the Mike Birbiglia interview, it was unbearable to have two inputs giving me that bad. But none of the interviews before that one had given me hum like that. Mm. And so I think it's like proximity of the computer to everything. But it also just might be the breakaway cable because I take away the breakaway cable and the humming stops. So it's not like something inside the interface that's doing it. It's definitely something external
to
the interface.
That's the least expensive option, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when you sever the input, you can still play audio from the headphone in the interface, and there's no humming from that. So that's a good thing. But maybe it just needs a new XLR cable. Does shielding wear out? Who knows?
It could.
Am I an electrical engineer?
I think
definitely not.
One of the XLR cables that I'm using, it busted somehow. I have my interface attached to the bottom of my desk with Velcro, actually. And it fell one day, and I think I busted the XLR cable, but it was just like the plastic part around the connection. It seems to be fine. Like, it seems to still work and everything, but I was a little worried. I think something like that can easily happen. Like, you know, a wire pops out from the, because inside the XLR cable, inside the rubber wiring on the outside, there's like this insulation, and then there are these other wires, and one of those wires could have frayed and poked out of something, and maybe that's what's, you know, grabbing the interference from your power strip, or who knows. It's, it could be a lot of things, but I would just try another cable, and they're pretty cheap.
Yeah, at the Birbiglia interview, I definitely swapped out an XLR cable, but it persisted. I don't know. I think it's the breakaway thing. But now I'm just waiting for them to release a USB-C version of it, like Apogee to release a USB-C interface. So that when I get like a new computer, which will happen sometime in the future, that I can just, you know, just use USB-C instead of having to use dongles or whatever. Because they have the Thunderbolt interfaces, the Elements, which is amazing. And I don't know. I just want to... I don't want to buy one now.
Yeah. And then, well, in 2 years, everything's going to be USB-C, which will be great.
Right, right. I mean, my company gets a pretty good discount on Apogee products, which is why I stick with them for the most part, because I just love their preamps, and I get a discount on it, so why not? So if I have to leave my company at any point, I'll probably pick one up before I go. Just whatever is most current on the market.
Yeah.
I was thinking of getting a four input an interface, just because, you know, I think at some point, if I'm doing a podcast with four people, I'd like to be able to provide that service.
Yeah.
Because right now I have a two input interface, and four would be nice to have.
Have you thought about building a mobile rig?
Yeah, I mean, definitely now. I got hit up by an old coworker who now works for Turner, at CNN essentially, about a freelance gig. And like, they're like, oh, well, you know, if we have some field work that we might need to send you up to like upstate New York to interview some executive or something like that. So is that something you'd be into? And I'm like, yes, it would.
Nice.
So a field rig is definitely, I mean, my field rig now has just been, Headgum has been loaning me two of the Procaster mics, the Rode Procasters, which are fine mics. They're not perfect, but they're fine.
Yeah.
And I've just been taking my Duet because I know that it has really good results and it's really clear. But they also give me the Zoom X6 or whatever it is, the six input Zoom, which is fine. You know, I just don't like the preamps, but it's a good interface if you have a good mic going into it.
Yeah,
they're just kind of noisy compared to the Apogee. But so yeah, as far as a mobile rig, I just probably want like a four input something. I might just get a Zoom. Maybe the Headgum will sell me their old one.
Yeah,
they have two.
I think like I've long wanted to have something like that. Not that I need it, but I just love the idea of, if I need to go somewhere and record something, you know, if I, that podcast I'm working on for that local company or something, rather than worry about whatever they have on hand, just have a hard case with foam in it, and I can carve out the foam exactly to the right size. I plop everything in there,
yes,
pull it all out, and we're good to go. Like, even having, because the nice thing about these like hard cases and the foam now, like you can have the wiring and everything all rigged up behind the foam, and you can just plug everything right in and have it all in there. You don't have to pull everything out.
That's something. That's a do-it-yourself project or something, like a building a like a Pelican case or something like that, with like a cover that you can just run cables through, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially just a mobile rack at that point.
Yeah, that would be cool. I would like to do that, because I think the worst part of the Birbiglia interview was setting up and having Mike kind of be like, come on, let's get the tape rolling, you know, like not that rude, but like in a way, he was just looking at me like, oh, we should really be rolling right now. I'm like, well, I mean, probably shouldn't, because this is not the way the podcast works. It's not like just two dudes talking podcast. It's like inside the actor's studio.
Right.
I just have the tape rolling for that.
Yeah.
It's like the guy comes out, it's like, you must now meet this actor.
Yeah.
Please welcome to the stage. That's kind of Jesse, you know, with a weirder voice. Oh my God, something that grinds my gears is, it's, what,
Santa Claus.
No, well, something that grinds my gears is Santa Claus. No, it's, I saw a podcast. This is probably the only place I can vent about this and not sound like a huge asshole, but I probably will anyway. We did Lori Kilmartin's episode last week, and she retweeted, which was lovely of her to do. She retweeted the episode, and she's like, oh, listen to this podcast that I was on. Jesse edited out all my ums and ahs. And I was like, no, he didn't. He definitely did not. And Jesse appeared also. He appeared on No Joke, another HeadGum podcast.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, like, he's like, oh, well, I only have a very limited amount of time with my guests and whatnot. And it's true. His LA interviews were all like an hour, like strictly an hour. Like our Rachel Bloom episode is only 40 minutes long, which is insane because the interview clocked in at under an hour. And then I edited it down to 40 minutes. But it was like, it was funny because he's making it seem like, you know, he has a very limited amount of time to talk with these people. So he has to be well-researched, which he is well-researched. But most of his interviews that he gives me are like, we have like about 2 hours with the guest pretty much. And I have to cut that down to an hour. And him telling the host of No Joke that like, oh yeah, well, you know, I have a very limited amount of time. And, you know, and they're like, oh yeah, your interviews, they sound really well composed and like very well put together and structured well. I'm like, if you only knew, if you only knew the things I have to cut out of
that's
that
podcast.
That's
what I'm saying. Like, if you were able to convince them, and I guess you can't because of what you described with, like, you know, jokes that haven't been actually told yet and right. All the stuff that you just have to cut out for probably mostly legal purposes and keeping people's reputations solid.
Right. Yeah. And like friendships intact. Yeah. Cause like some comedians will talk about other comedians and be like, oh, actually, can you take that out? I didn't want them to say that about them. And that's mostly what we have to deal with.
Yeah. But I mean, if you were able to put out like a, you know, an ad free, uncut raw version of the show, people would be floored.
I don't think they would. I think it'd be way more annoying to listen to.
Oh yeah, it would. Like one of my favorite podcasts is On Being with Krista Tippett. And what I like about their show is their producers, which are very good. They produce down the episode to, you know, about an hour. I think like 51 minutes is about the average for their show. And every week they put out that episode and then they also put out the unedited episode. So they'll both be in the feed. You can just, you know, delete the one that you don't want. And then you've got the hour long version or the hour and a half to 2 hour version, which is really cool.
I wonder who their audience is for each, because at some point you got to be like, fuck it. I'm just not editing this week, man. Like I'm just going to put out the same one on both feeds. Like,
yeah. I think it's pretty rare that people listen to the unedited one. Just looking on Breaker, by the likes. I mean, there are some likes on the unedited ones, but it definitely seems that, the edited option is the most common.
Yeah. If we had to edit this podcast, I don't know what you would do. You'd probably have murdered yourself already.
It'd be a 5-minute show.
Yeah.
No, I do very, very light editing and that's perfectly fine for me. I mean, if there's a moment when I'm listening to, like, I'll do like a rough cut, I'll just, you know, chop off the top, chop off the bottom, stick in the bumpers and then export. It's just easier for me to listen through that way and make the notes and everything. If there's something in there that I think, oh, actually there'd be something kind of fun there, I'll pop it in. Like the episode that came out today on the 30th, which I think is number 11. There was a little bit where I think something screwed up on your end and we just both kept recording. So there's a fun little moment where I was able to splice in a little bit of production, but nothing. Like it's barely anything at all. But if there's fun moments like that, I'll put it in just because why not? Basically, we're going to release these episodes only once. And if there's something fun that I can do that's going to take just a couple seconds, that's fine. But I don't know. I do kind of miss like proper audio editing. I do miss it. I wish I had a better excuse and more time to do more of it. I'm not saying that I would do that for this show. I don't think it requires it. But I always wanted to edit at least like one episode of Bantha Fodder at some point. But
you can have it, buddy. I don't know if you want it anymore, but...
Well, there's nothing to edit right now.
I know, definitely not. I still want to do the jacket review. The fashion review with May.
Yeah.
I think that'd be fun.
Yeah.
We should do that.
Yeah, we can do that. We can do it. She's down for it. We can do it.
There's a lot of stuff I want to do, but that particularly for the season would be fun.
Oh, my God. Fine. Okay.
We could do like a QVC. What if we do like a QVC thing where like May is like trying to sell Han Solo's jacket and we talk about Cassian's jacket because that's such a great jacket.
It's also very expensive.
Did you see? Oh, the Cassian thing got greenlit. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just down for more K2.
Yeah. Well, that's what I said to Erin as soon as she like, you know, pooped her pants when I friggin' showed her that link. And then I was like, you know what that means? More K2. And because just the adventures of those two running around, it's gonna be awesome. It's gonna be great.
Yeah, it'll be fun, I'm sure.
Tudyk definitely coming back to voice K2. I wonder if they'll recast Diego Luna. That's interesting to think about.
I don't know.
Diego.
I don't think so.
You don't think they'll recast him? I don't know. He's a hot ticket.
Yeah, I saw him on something the other day. Nothing that I was able to watch, but maybe it was something that was in the background on a TV somewhere, maybe at a bar or something.
Probably Narcos. He was at Aaron's job a couple days ago.
Really? Did they get to meet?
Aaron had jury duty though. No, because Aaron had jury duty.
No.
Yeah, she's been on jury duty all week.
Oh, that's terrible.
I know, isn't it?
Oh, what luck.
It's awful. Yeah. Yeah, it stinks. Gotta meet. Just there's honestly an action figure of Diego Luna in her display case, and it's me. It's just me. It's weird and it's freaky. It's just Diego Luna and me. We're the same person.
Hmm. Well,
he speaks better Spanish, I guess.
Yeah, he does. She has a type.
I guess.
May, I don't think it's any secret, but May has a big old crush on Conan O'Brien. I'm not sure how I fit into that picture, but
tall and Irish. I guess.
I'm not anywhere
You're Irish
close.
English, right?
I'm a good hearty mix, but primarily Italian. I don't think anybody looking at me would say that I have a lot of Irish in me.
Really? I just go by your last name.
Tender? Yeah, there's no Irish on that side. And Tender isn't even my family's original last name.
Is it like an Ellis Island thing?
No. Actually, have I not told this story?
Ooh,
to you?
Please. Let's extend this show a little bit more.
Yeah, we got a little bit of time. Okay, so how to best frame this. I learned this story when I was a very young kid, and it's one that my grandpa has been apt to repeat over the years. But his father, his father's name was John. That's where my dad got his name. My dad is also John, but John Tender, in relation to this story, it was my great grandfather on my dad's side. And when he was younger, he lived in a small town somewhere in West Virginia. It was a mining community, I think, primarily. And he was born to a family of, I think, like four or five brothers. And they were they had a reputation in town for being kind of rough. I mean, I don't know if a gang is really the right word for it, but he was lumped in with his brothers, and they were known to be a little rowdy. They didn't have like necessarily the best reputation. And when my great grandfather grew up and you know, came to the age where he could enlist and join the military, he did. And basically he left and he never came back. And when he left, he changed his name. He changed it from Tunder, T-U-N-D-E-R, to Tender. Not the most original, but it'll do the trick. And he was able to go off, and he just kind of restarted his life, distancing himself from his brothers and sisters.
Wow.
So, yeah,
he
went off and
wild.
He changed his name. He ended up getting married. He had my grandfather. And I guess, as the story goes, at some point, he received a letter. I think one of his relatives, maybe one of his brothers, tracked him down and sent him a letter. But it was addressed to John Tunder. And his wife, who received it from the mailbox, asked him about it, and he came clean. And so she basically told him, like, you need to go to the courthouse immediately and have our name legally changed. Because it was never legally changed. He just adopted.
Oh, he just was going by. Mm-hmm. He was just like doing a Dick Whitman and a Don Draper kind of thing.
Basically.
Just becoming somebody else.
Yeah. So for years, they were living under this name that wasn't officially theirs, but they eventually legalized it. And that's the name my grandpa had, and it's the name he gave to me. So that's why I'm a Tender. And it's interesting because now that I have access to Ancestry.com, I can, you know, I can go back and I can find like these people. I can figure out who these people were and where they lived. And, you know, I have all these cousins that I just basically have never met and probably will never meet. And my grandpa, I think he knows one of his uncles on his dad's side. I think he moved to like Pittsburgh or something like that. And I don't think they were close by any means, but, he's at least like aware of their family and knows of his cousins on that side and everything. But, I was looking back at a bunch of old documents from the town where they came from, and I think I know where my last name might have come from, because they have, back in the day, they had these basically town directories. They were little directories, kind of like a phone book, but smaller. And it told not only the, you know, the person's name and number and address, but it also said what their like occupation was. So basically, if you needed a seamstress, you could just look down the list, you could find a seamstress, and you could just call them up at their house, and they could, you know, you could do business that way. It's kind of a cool system. But I found a couple of listings where I think their names were just mistyped. Like when they were laying out the directory, they input the name incorrectly, and Tender was used in the context of my family like a couple times years before my great grandpa would have ever gone off and assumed that name. So it's kind of interesting, but yeah, it's kind of the lore of my family. So there's not many of us. There are other Tender like families out there, but they're not related. We're not related to them.
Huh. That's wild.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, does it make you feel weird that like you should be something else? Like your last name should be Tender? Like, is that weird?
I don't know if it's weird, because it's not like my grandfather was even ever a part of that family. You know, I'm three generations removed from the Tunders. And
but like, what if you just decided tomorrow, you're like, you know what? Fuck it, I'm a Schmidt. Jacob Schmidt is my name. And you just go to the courthouse and you change your name to Schmidt or whatever. Or you don't, whichever route you wanted to go. But like three generations from now, you know, all the little Schmidts find out that their dad was Tender, or their great-great-grandfather was a Tender. And like, that would make me feel weird. Like if I found out that like my family's name, like going back, you know, the male lineage, I guess, would have to be if that's how the family was, and be like, oh yeah, well, my name was like Kamito or something like that. That'd be weird to me. Like it would make me want to be authentic and be the original, you know?
I don't have that feeling. I'm very interested in my ancestry. Like my ancestry account is pretty well documented. I didn't spend like a ton of time on it, but you don't really need to these days because of the amazing amount of information that's available to you. But I do think it's interesting, and you know, I like the story. I think it's an interesting story. I think it's more interesting than the stories most people can tell, because they don't really know a lot about their family, and this just happens to be the history of mine. So it's kind of neat. And also, if you have a dollar bill, you know how you can fold the dollar bill so the letters line up to say, you know, silly things.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain configuration that I learned to fold, and in probably like elementary school actually. And I can fold it to make it say Tender, and I thought, oh, that's kind of clever. But if you take the E, and then which is basically part of a fold, and then you fold it over, it'll be a U. It's the E.
Whoa,
it's,
dude.
Yeah, it's where...
Some, like, InfoWar shit
know,
right here.
I know. So, actually, a long, long time ago, I folded that up for myself. I folded one for my grandpa, and I folded one for my dad, and we all had one in our wallet. It's kind of cool.
Oh, that is sweet. You do love lineage. I have a family member who has our family tree all mapped out, and we'll send it out. I wonder if she's done any work on that recently, or if I'm sure it's always a work in progress. It's family. It goes back forever.
I know. It's crazy. On Ancestry, while I had like a 2-week free trial, I think, when you sign up, I was able to trace some of my lineage back as far as the 1500s.
That's 1500s?
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's on the side of the family of my Aunt Phyllis. She's kind of like the family historian on my grandmother's side, and so she has records of everything, and it must be something in the blood through that side of the family, because you can go back pretty far in a lot of ways. Like, you know, the ancestry.com website basically allows you to collaborate with other people. Like you'll add the stuff that you know, and then it'll give you hints or suggestions towards other people. And those hints and suggestions might include other family trees of people that have, you know, built their family trees, and looks like you have some branches that touch, and then you can pull that in, and then you have this whole other section that might include a couple more generations that you didn't know about and didn't have information for. And so you can keep going through that and going back and back, and eventually, if you're lucky, someone distantly related to you might have gone back and actually gone across the seas, and they might have gone to the churches in the UK and other European countries where your family come from, and they'll pull those records, because we, you know, Ancestry doesn't have all that stuff on file. That's stuff that you still have to, you know, go dig through and digitize yourself, or, you know, hire somebody to go do that. And in some cases, you know, you'll have that in your family line, and it's crazy. I mean, I have relatives in my family that are that were lords and ladies. Like, going back far enough, you can find sirs, and it's kind of wild.
Yeah, man, it's weird to think that there's somebody sharing my blood, you know, like in another country. My family's from Italy, and they didn't all come over here. Mm. There's got to be some left. It's weird.
Yeah,
very weird.
Sir George Booth, Sheriff of Chester, is my 12th great grandfather.
So where does the Tundra come in?
Actually, you know what? Tundra is kind of a dead line. Like, I'm sure there's something out there, and I pray to God that at some point I can find something. But I've been able to find very little about. I sent you some photos of my great parents here. It's John Tundra's parents. John Tundra was actually the second John Tundra. So I don't think he was titled the second because they had a different middle name. But my great-great-grandfather, who moved to the United States with, I think he came over with his wife Anna with their oldest son, who was an infant. I think they actually came across, like, the kid actually might have been born on the boat. I'm not entirely sure. But I can't find his parents. I can find hers, and that's as far as I can go back on that side. But it's just hard because they came from a section of Europe that I think now is, but somewhere between Austria and the Czech Republic. But the lines over there were changing so often at that time that it's impossible to actually pinpoint where they're from.
Where somebody decided to change their name to Tundra?
Well, no, I think Tundra. Tundra was probably their name there. That's probably a legitimate name. I think Tundra was legit. But when they came across, you know, you put down basically when you do your declaration, when you come to the United States, you would say what country you're from. And, you know, at that time, people coming from the same town or within a radius of 20 miles were putting down any one of four different countries because the country lines there were changing so often due to war and, you know, land disputes. Like, it was a very tumultuous time for that part of Europe, so it's very hard to track people from that certain point of time. And if you can find it, you can generally go back a little further, provided that the records still exist somewhere out there. But in a lot of cases, those records have been destroyed. So I don't know, it's kind of sad. What, you know, what's
that is really sad to think about,
because you'll never know.
Like, that, but yeah, the destruction of information, it's like, you know, we've talked about this a couple times outside of this podcast, but like losing information, like when MySpace goes down, or
yeah, when you lose your blogs.
Yeah, like it's, but I mean, that happens in things that matter, you know, like those Phoenicia Fair blogs, that's just posterity and, like, you know, just, or just, you know, nostalgia. But in the grand scheme of life and knowing who you are, it's not going to make a big difference. It certainly colors in some lines, mm-hmm. or like in between some lines, but that's it. But like, to not be able to like have like town hall records from however long ago, or like, I mean, records have always been a thing, I feel like, in human history. Was there ever a point where we weren't keeping records? It's like, and it's a bummer to think that, like, you know, a city could burn and everything could be lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's wild and it's sad because there was no such thing as backups back then.
Do you think there's going to be like a point in the information age that we're in now, like, or the age of the internet, that we go through like something for the history books, you know, like where there's just a crazy data purge, or not a purge, but like a wipeout,
like
it would have to be like
an EMP,
a horrible event, I guess, something that wiped out everything.
Yeah.
But I mean, there couldn't be a national,
because like, that would be crazy.
Like an EMP the size of,
I think I started writing a science fiction story about something like this in high school,
where all the data got erased somehow.
Yeah,
like a big magnet just flew over.
Because,
although magnets don't matter anymore, because what about SSDs though? Like that you would need, what would you need electricity to fry a hard drive?
Yeah, but right? let's just imagine. Let's just imagine that everything electronic is wiped out, and that includes all data stored on magnetic tapes or disks or, you know, any sort of flash storage.
Mm-hmm.
What do we have left? We have things that are written. So we still have maybe whatever our newspapers are, whatever we decide to hang on to for our newspapers. We have our magazines, we have our books. And then, and that's pretty much all we're going to have for like the modern record, is we're going to have, you know, classic literature in the sense of being printed on paper and distributed in bookstores and things. But beyond that, there's going to be a gap. There's going to be a huge gap. Like, you know, imagining that CDs are included in that, you know, digital electronic purge,
digital, yeah.
You're going to lose CDs. And then does that include cassettes as well? Like,
are we going to lose all music recorded,
all music,
not on analog tape,
right?
Which is probably like 95% of the last 20 years,
yeah.
You know, like
you would lose a huge portion. So then like if this is a fallout scenario, everything's wiped and all people die except, you know, a few, then you have this world where the only information that the people that survive or visitors that come to our planet later when they're doing archaeology to find, you know, records of our past, like time, there may be records of these tumultuous times that we know as our modern area or modern era, but most of what they're going to be able to find is like the 1950s prior. Like,
yeah,
it's gonna be,
I mean,
so weird.
Well, that's like those thoughts that people have about like Mars or whatever. Like, I think Louis C.K. had like that stupid tweet rant about Mars being the old Earth, and that like we traveled here from Mars on a spaceship and that Mars got wiped out or whatever. Like, it's just you know, like an ancient astronauts and whatever. It's a stupid thought that people have posted on the internet before about how, you know, Mars is the remnant of what was and we moved to Earth or something like that, and we're just like the remnants of an old society that came from outer space or something like that. There's just all these stupid things, but they're fun to think about in the same way that we're thinking about, like, you know, what would happen if we lost all the data on the planet or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It would be bad, you know, like it's just this thing.
Like, a shame.
Yes,
it would be a shame. Like, I think it'd be a shame. Would it be bad?
Well, we'd have more important things to worry about. Like, if we lost all the data on the planet,
yeah,
Earth or whatever in our country, it's probably because something else is going on that's worth our attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a war or like a famine or electricity loss or something,
mm-hmm,
like that. Like, we're going to be having more to worry about than my MySpace blogs and my album or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it's sad. But, like, well, that's why the importance of, like, playing music and, like, that's how, before we had recorded mediums, you know, that's how we passed songs along and sheet music.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it was mostly just learning. Like, you know,
think of how important performance will be again, like, and concert would be, you know, and that kind of thing. I like that.
So, yeah, so this is starting to sound like a good idea. Like, let's find that magnet.
Well, it would just, yeah, I mean, the magnet or the EMP burst that would just settle everything. It's the truth. I mean, it would just be... It would put more emphasis on rebuilding again, assuming that, like, the assumption in this scenario is that whatever we had cannot be rebuilt.
Mm.
And, like, we can't turn on our computers again.
Well,
can't
maybe you could,
recover
but
data
it'd be a very long
drive.
Time until that could be, you know,
right,
reinvented.
Or the assumption is that the world is not able to turn on anything again in this scenario. So, I mean, it would put a huge emphasis on the written arts and the... Like, handwriting again would become important, and language and performance and art and painting. No more iPads to do digital artwork. No more Photoshop. You know, it would just, everything would be chemicals in a dark room again. Film. It'd be an interesting way, and like an interesting...
I'm just going to start carving stuff on rocks.
Yeah, I know. Start writing my
wherever
name.
I go. Like, I'm just gonna, if I find a nice flat stone, I'm just gonna chisel out a little bit of my history so that maybe somebody can find it down the line.